We talked about some of the different positions regarding war. You have like the pacifist and the non-resistance approach, kind of based off of the teaching of the New Testament where you turn the other cheek. You don't want to kill somebody who hasn't become a Christian yet. The prospect of actually entering into a war where you might kill a Christian brother. And so it has a lot of these reasons why they support pacifism, no war at all. And kind of the answer to that is really rooted in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews, where some of the Old Testament saints were celebrated because of their valor in battle. You have Romans 13, where the government does not bear the sword for nothing. And you kind of have a larger principle of self-defense, right? That if somebody were to come at you and, let's say, threaten your children, lethal force, it would be understandably justifiable to say that turn the other cheek does not apply to them. It means that you, as far as loving your neighbor, would defend their lives. Now, if it was just for you, you can probably make a case that you're supposed to turn the other cheek. So when you kind of take that concept and apply it to war, you develop what's called just war theory, okay? And just war theory doesn't say that you should always go to war, but it does say that there are certain situations where it is permissible to go to war as long as it's conducted in a certain way. And so it was originally founded by St. Augustine. He wrote The City of God, and this was during a time where the pagans were ransacking Rome, right as it's kind of turning towards becoming more of a Christian nation. And so he justified taking actions to defend it. And the theme was picked up by Martin Luther, John Calvin, many of the other reformers. And so they have a just war position that's kind of based off of the notion of self-defense. So here's some of the presuppositions, and we're looking at page 10, for a just war. Number one, evil cannot be avoided. Romans 3:10-18 make it very clear that fallen men are capable of and perform all kinds of evil acts, right? And so I think there's one of the guiding principles of Christian thought is we do not believe in the inherent goodness of man. Does that make sense? You know, like if you look at the way our government within the United States is formed, there's checks and balances. Why do you have to have checks and balances? Because there's a belief that absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? It's to prevent a dictatorship. We don't believe that man is good, and so there are precautions that you have to take to protect yourself against the evils of others. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's one presupposition. Secondly, a just war is normative for Christians and non-Christians alike. If it's just, it can be something that Christians participate in. It's not one of those things where I'm going to abstain and hope that non-Christians win this battle for me. If there's a just and righteous cause, it's just and righteous. Three, this theory does not justify war. The goal is to bring war within the limits of justice and try to reduce the number of wars. Okay, so it's a limiting agent. It's not trying to advocate it. And then fourth, this theory assumes that private citizens do not have authority to use force. So all just war is mediated through the government. So one thing that just war, that makes it different is we can't necessarily take Israel in the Old Testament and say that is a paradigm for fighting wars. When Israel was told to invade the promised land, one, it was a command of God, right? Because they were going to go ahead and take territory. God gave the land to Abraham as opposed to somebody else. Canaanites and others kind of infiltrated it during the 400 years while they're in Egypt. And because of their wickedness, God was going to punish them, right? So he was using Israel as a judgment on those pagan nations. And so there were certain things that wouldn't fall into a just war theory, like one, it was to conquer and gain territory. It was about, to a certain extent, pillaging and getting plunder from the people who were there. Some of the tactics involved killing civilians as well, right? But that was a unique situation that was facilitated by divine revelation. Okay? So we can't look at the Old Testament and say, that's where we get just war theory from. This is something that's kind of pieced together in the New Testament. Okay, any questions about this so far? Okay. So, first criteria, a just war is basically defensive in posture, not aggressive. Why is that an important plank of just war theory? It has to be defensive in posture, not aggressive. What do you think?
Well, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, kind of thing. You're not going after.
Yeah, you bring up an extra point. Like, when we hear eye for an eye, that doesn't necessarily mandate that you take an eye for an eye. It basically says, if somebody takes your eye, you don't take their life.
Yeah.
Right? If you've ever seen The Untouchables, Sean Connery just passed away. Do you remember his kind of Chicago Way speech? Yeah. If he pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of theirs to the morgue. That's not eye for eye, right? That's an escalation.
It's the Chicago way.
It's the Chicago way, right? Little tribute. Mm-hmm. Love that speech. One of the great speeches in movie history.
I think this, like this first one, kind of reminds me of the difference when you talk about the evil cannot be avoided. Is that when you have a worldview that man is basically good in nature, it tends to view all wars as aggressive. That's if we just wouldn't have war, then everything would be good,
mm-hmm.
and they would just like it's the aggression that's, and it takes for it overlooks the fact that there's always this evil going on,
mm-hmm.
and so whether or not you view man as inherently good or evil,
mm-hmm.
it helps you understand why you can have a defensive war to protect mm-hmm. people from aggressive.
Yeah, I think one of the examples that kind of goes through my head are the Vikings. Right? I mean, what did the Vikings do? Yeah. Every spring, they would say, yeah, we're going to go east, west, north, or south. Well, there's this place called England. We'll just go ahead and land there, kill everybody, take their plunder, and come back. And so the question is, what were the British supposed to do? Right? And so that would be a case where you look at, you can have a defensive posture where the goal is not to go to Norway and Sweden and, you know, take Viking land away from them, but to defend yourselves from enemy incursion. Okay? So secondly, the intent must be just. The objectives must be peace and the protection of innocent lives. So empire expansion, grabbing oil wells. Becky's reading an interesting book on 10 maps that changed the world and talking about how there's certain parcels of land that will always be fought. Like in China, they want the island of Taiwan because it controls a lot of the waterways. And when you kind of look at the map, you can see how it's strategically located for their naval expansion. Mm-hmm. Or you look at Russia, and they want Ukraine because of the farmland and other aspects where they're never going to let that go, right? So there's certain parcels of land that are very strategic to a country where they will fight over it to kind of get these resources. Well, that's not a good criteria for a just war. Okay? So it's not about empire expansion. It's not about getting material gain. And really a lot of those invading empires like the Vikings and the Huns, a lot of their wealth was gained by plunder, not by actually building a civilization.
And two, we're also mm-hmm. saying that if that's not the ultimate cause, then a lot of times that acquiring those strategic resources and locations mm-hmm. can be a means to, you know, if you're fighting in World War II, gaining certain positions in the Pacific and
mm-hmm.
storming the beaches and those types of things.
Yeah, when you're in the act of...
If that's the mean, yeah, and the means of... But that's not the justification, right?
Yeah. War must be a matter of last resort when all attempts at reconciliation or peaceful resolution have been exhausted. And so there should be a reluctance to go to war. A just war must be accompanied by a formal declaration by a properly constituted authorized authority. And this is kind of an interesting point. Like, why do you think that's necessary? That there has to be a formal declaration by an authorized governmental authority? Why would that be, make it just? What would be the alternative?
Like bombing a bunch of ships in the harbor?
Yeah.
You know, attacking a nation that you're not at war with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A day that will live in infamy.
That's right. Like all the illusions, right? Right, does the nation know that they're at war with you? And if you knew that a country was at war with you, that would at least give the civilians an opportunity to move away from military installations. Gives people a chance to decide if they want to engage in it or not. It gives a nation an opportunity to consider the terms of peace. Does that make sense? So, and it's not a vigilante war, right? It's the government that wields the sword. It's under that official authority. The objectives must be limited. Unconditional surrender or total destruction shouldn't be the goal. The goal is not vengeance, it's restraint. Military action must be proportional, both in weaponry employed and troops deployed. That's kind of an interesting thing. So why is that important? Why would it be a war? Why would a war be unjust if, let's say, we countered ISIS with nuclear bombs? Danny, you have any thoughts?
Well, if it was a strategic target where you're not killing a lot of civilians, that might be okay. But you know, try to minimize the civilian casualties, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and the goal is not to annihilate with some huge advantage. Now, I think there's a place for a nuclear arsenal, and that is as a deterrent.
What do you think of the bombs in Japan that we used?
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting... That'd be an interesting one to debate. Let's go ahead. We're going to hold off on those bombs in Japan because I think that is an interesting case study here, okay? So we have military action must be proportionate with both weaponry employed and troops deployed. So non-combatants must be protected and military operations must demonstrate the highest possible degree of discrimination. So you do what you can to make sure that civilians don't die. And then 8 is, without reasonable hope for success, no military action should be launched. It would be wrong to sacrifice many lives in vain. So if you know that your country is going to get slaughtered, do you really want to go into war and just facilitate that happening? So are there any of these criteria that are controversial? Did it make sense to you? Now, one thing is defensive in nature. There is an allowance for preemptive strike within that. Like if you knew that Iran had 10 nuclear missiles that had range to hit the U.S. and they were being fueled, and you got truly credible intelligence that they were going to be launched next week at the U.S., you can probably make a case that striking those missile bases before they strike us would be just, right? You know, if your target is to do that. But then you get into regime changes, nation building, and some of those things. That's where it gets a little bit more complex. The other thing, too, is... a just war doesn't necessarily have to be just against one country against another country. If you have, let's say, ISIS or Al-Qaeda or a group of Vikings, right, they're not organized into a country. But you know, self-defense still applies in those cases too. Okay, so any disagreements with this? Does this seem like a fair criteria for a just war? So let's look at some examples, okay? Some of the recent wars that we fought. World War II. How could you make a case that World War II was a just war? Any thoughts, Jessica? No. How could you make a case that World War II was a just war?
Germany and Italy and Japan, they were trying to expand, and they were slaughtering many innocent people, and it was just out of control. They needed to be stopped.
Yeah.
There's a threat to our homeland, potentially, that if they kept expanding, that there was a threat to America.
Yeah.
As well as Japan struck us.
Yeah.
First, like, we they attacked us. We were trying to stay out of it.
Yeah, so it's fair to say when you get attacked, you're not asking for the war comes to you, right?
And like number three, you know, last resort, I mean, there's lots of attempts at appeasing prior to that. You know, Hitler just wasn't given this, given this. And eventually, you kind of have to realize, well, there's not going to be any diplomatic means.
Yeah, and basically Hitler, he invaded Poland, and then he invaded France through Belgium. So he went on the offensive in two ways, right? And really promoting an evil ideology, and again, done by the extermination camps. And so his war was very much unjust, right? There was nothing just about the German side in the war, or even the Japanese side, for that matter. I mean, they were about territory expansion. Before they attacked us, they were attacking China, making incursions there. You had the Rape of Nanjing, where they killed and raped innocent women. And I mean, it was just awful. And you can look at the Japanese prison camps, right? So they were doing bad things and expanding the reach. So you look at that pretext. I mean, but then you look at, let's say, dropping the nuclear bombs, right? So was that a just act or not? That's why, if you ever go to the, anybody ever gone to the Truman Library? Okay, well.
Where's it at?
It's in Independence, Missouri. So Becky and I kind of have a thing for presidential libraries. We've gone to, started with Reagan, went to the Reagan Library, gone to the Nixon one, George W. Bush, Eisenhower. We just did Andrew Jackson, and we also did Truman. But it's basically kind of walks through what is probably one of the most consequential and controversial decisions of Truman's career, dropping the bomb. So one of the classic arguments that they make is that a land invasion in Japan would cost countless lives, because they saw by island hopping, going from place to place, that Japanese would rather commit suicide than be defeated in battle, right? So part of the justification would be the just the blood cost, the cost of blood to American soldiers and civilians, right? So that would be one argument for it. What would be an argument against the ethics of the nuclear bomb?
Innocent life that was lost.
Total devastation as well.
I think what you have to remember is there is an ethic in dropping the bomb on Hiroshima, and there's the ethics of dropping it on Nagasaki. Right, 2 days apart. I think with, and there were some other elements at play, like Russia was about to get into the war. I think it was is like August 15th, or there's some date where there's a secret treaty signed where Russia was going to enter into the war against Japan. And so there was a concern that what was happening in Europe was going to happen in Japan. You know, or maybe one island would become North Japan, like North Korea. And so part of the reason why they did Nagasaki was to end the war sooner than later, right? But I think Hiroshima is one thing, but dropping another bomb 2 days later before Japan even had a chance to surrender, that's probably the, in my humble opinion, probably goes beyond just war theory in that case. Does that make sense? What do you think, Scott? And I'm willing, I'm open
to that. Yeah, no, I'm just wondering, you know, we've talked many times with Chris's grandpa, who just turned 97, and he flew bombers. Yeah, they flew bombing raids over Japan and firebombs. And his, you know, he would never comment on whether it was the right or the wrong thing to do. He would say that they had basically wiped out all of their capabilities, their cities, their factories, and so it reminds me of what you're saying, is that it didn't matter. Even then, they would rather all die than to surrender.
Yeah.
And so, in one sense, it makes me wonder if that was a way of convincing those who weren't bombed to surrender, if that could possibly have shown mercy to others, even though it was violates, you know, I think it does, you know, it's not discriminatory, you know, we talk about art, and, you know, is it proportionate to the weaponry that they're deploying, you know, I would say it violates that, so, you know, he kind of seemed to say that we were winning, the war was basically going to be over, it was just, when was it going to be over?
Yeah, so. And you might be able to make a case, like, what would have happened if they would have dropped the nuclear bomb off the coast of Tokyo? In full view of everybody. Mm-hmm. Would it be?
Yeah. They had one more. They dropped one as a warning, and then.
Yeah, you know, would that have been?
It's easy to second guess.
And that's just it. It's easy to second guess, but I mean, it's a. You can appreciate the gravity of why it's such a controversial decision.
Yeah.
Because honestly, the firebombing, I mean, that killed more people than the nuclear bomb did. More civilians than nuclear bombs did, but Japan wasn't about to surrender. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's look at some of these other wars. The Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. I'm testing everybody's history proficiency.
I know, that's the
largely just political.
It's a proxy war, you know, kind of against Russia, USSR.
Yeah, war about ideology.
Trying to keep the communism spread in check.
Uh-huh. How about Afghanistan? I think it's important to separate Iraq and Afghanistan.
I think one of the interesting things about, you know, fighting whether it's ISIS or these groups that are you're not fighting a war against the nation, you know, is that our methods seem to have been, I think they become more just in the same sense that you're sending in a SEAL team to take out just a specific individual in their home that is the target versus bombing the entire city that they, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that's been, I'm sure there's, I wonder if they've misused that as well, taking out other targets as well. But you could see how it could be used in a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you look at Afghanistan. I mean, do you think that was just,
How did the Afghanistan War begin?
Well, it was after 9/11, I guess. Day two. And what they discovered was Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were operating in the northern region of Afghanistan and conducting terrorist operations there that you know, allowed them to execute 9/11, and there was concern that war was on its way. And so George W. Bush warned Afghanistan, which was under control of the Taliban at the time, which was a very militant Islamic group that was extremely oppressive, by the way. And he said, you have 48 hours to hand over Osama bin Laden, otherwise we're going to come and get him. And so the war in Afghanistan was really, the Taliban fell pretty quickly after that. So most of the war was kind of in the north and kind of rooting out some al-Qaeda camps and trying to hunt down and find Osama bin Laden. So that was the pretext of the war. With Iraq, it was Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and we need to preemptively get to it before he uses them against other people. Plus, he's facilitating training centers for al-Qaeda and these other terrorist groups that are attacking America. So those were the two wars. So if you were to look at Afghanistan versus, and as you know with Iraq, I mean, the weapons of mass destruction weren't there. The intelligence community got it wrong. They did have them at one point in time, but there were little tiny stockpiles, but it wasn't at the degree that it was a real credible threat. So you look at those wars, I don't need to get like unpatriotic or anything, but they were far enough away from both of those wars that we can assess whether or not those would fall into just war theory or not. So looking at Afghanistan, what do you think? Is that a just war?
We were attacked.
Yeah.
And to not do anything, that's not the answer. We have to do something.
Yeah.
I think it was figuring out where they are, and the nation attacking, or is it this terrorist group? I think that's where it got. Mm-hmm. It gets tricky when it's not just a nation and the leadership of a nation, but
Yeah, there was, and I think there was an issue where the Taliban weren't about to let us go in and find them and get them, and they were going to produce them. So, I mean, so personally, I don't necessarily have a problem with Afghanistan, because it's not like we were bombing Kabul and all these other places. You know, it was mostly peaceful for the Afghanis, and I think Iraq might have been probably a different story. You know, how history will judge it. And I think we did end up winning the war in Iraq. I think that's true. But would it fall under just war theory? I think it'd be hard to prove that. Does that make sense? But I look at, let's say, Operation Desert Storm in the early 90s, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, and we went in there and we pushed them out and went no further. I think that would definitely qualify as a just war. Probably one of the most just wars that we've executed. Ben, you have thoughts?
I'll just, what do you think about the nation building deal, where we're kind of the police of the world?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, there is a lot of real dictators that do horrible things to their people, and I mean,
yeah,
that's not right either, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, nation building is that's a tough issue. Like, should we have gone into Rwanda and prevented the genocide by force? Should we go into Syria right now and prevent some of the atrocities that are happening there? So that becomes like, when you're a third party, what's your responsibility to intervene, knowing that it could lead to lasting military conflict? So, I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, it's a big cost to us, I mean, in lives, and it's lots of money to do that. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why, I mean, pray for our president and the wisdom to know what to do in that situation. And I think the other thing is, without reasonable hope for success, military action should not be launched. Right? So there has to be, we can actually go in there and end this and stabilize things and it'll be done. But if you're not able to do that, you're not convinced you're able to do that, then military action is not wise or prudent. You're not really helping anything. Does that make sense? So I look at, let's say, Syria, just what a mess that is. I'm not sure if any military action can stabilize the situation on our part.
So if the conflict doesn't involve you, should you just stay away from it then, you think?
I think it depends on whether or not, I think, number eight, can you be successful? If the question is, you can be successful with minimal intervention, then I think if it's a just cause, then probably. But if not, then there's really nothing you can do about it. So that's why number eight is a very important plank of just war theory.
It puts us in a difficult spot when you think about this defensive imposture, in the sense that whatever nation has the greatest military might will have the greatest ability to, if there's a genocide going on somewhere and there's no one that has the military capability, then it puts a lot greater stress on whoever has the biggest stick, basically, to decide, should we get involved with this? And also, I think it's tough globally to think about when does it involve you, when does it not, knowing what's eventually going to come back, what's going to be better in the long run for the world or your nation. It's tough, I would think.
Once you get involved, how long do you stay involved? In talking to Jason, who's in the Army and has been for a long time, they get involved in the Middle East or some of these places, and they will, be like America or do these things, and once they back out, they just go right back to... They want to live, 200 years ago and run their goats in the hillsides and they want to modernize. So, if you decide to enter something like that, how long do you risk American lives and spend our money?
Having a realistic goal. Okay, we're going to go in, we're going to remove, and knowing whether or not that's something that's just going to, like you said, start as soon as you leave.
They
remove one
change for
dictator,
it to be
you're just going
to another dictator that could be worse to come in and take over. And
that's it.
How unjust is it for us to go to other countries with the intention of making them more like America?
That's a good question, too.
Because I feel like it's one thing for it to be like, this is a genocidal dictator, when that's obviously, that's immoral, right. That's not right. But then whether it's just we disagree with the form of government that they're using, like communism versus our system of capitalism, is it just for us to go on and be like, you need to be...
Like in Vietnam?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, as a proxy... It was a proxy war. We're going to fight the Cold War in Vietnam. And originally it was just selling arms and selling supplies, and it was people who were going to train people on how to use it, then soldiers on the ground, and we kind of got sucked into it. I think that's a fair question. I mean, if there's a form of government that advocates sacrificing children to Moloch, right, where it's just clear evil practices... I mean, people complain about missionaries all the time, changing people, and it's like, do you realize what India was like before the missionaries got there? I mean, every widow was expected to cast herself on the funeral pyre. You go to other places, and they have all these practices that are just straight out evil. And so, moderating that is good. Military might's not the only way of doing so, though. I mean, I think there's other ways, too. That's what I'm going to be talking about in my sermon today, is fighting's not the only option for defending the church. There's other things that you can exhaust first. It's like a good arms sale. Like, if there's a country like Ukraine that's being threatened by Russia, one way you can help them out is to sell airplanes and anti-missile defenses and stuff like that to them, to make it harder for Russia to do that. And that way you're not engaged in military conflict. So there's ways you can, there's fighting and fortifying. And fortification is another way of just kind of helping a weaker country. Yeah, and I think that's what we've done in Syria is we sell, you know, sent arms and sold arms to certain groups of insurgents. But here's another question. How would you respond? How do you respond to the objection that humans, being sinful, aren't able to discern with accuracy what is just and right, therefore it would be better for us not to fight a war because we cannot deal with just and righteous motivations? Or you look at, let's say, World War II, it might have been just and right, but you look at how we rounded up the Japanese and put them in internment camps, and we dropped the bomb in Nagasaki, you know, so you look at that. Not even that was a just war. How would you respond to that? What do you think, James?
Well, it's easy to look back and say this and that's wrong, but in a war, you probably can't make a decision that's just clean, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
You just have to basically make the best choice you can make at the time. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with governments, that I think we talked about this before. I mean, we're not like in a theocracy.
Yeah.
Our government can make choices that are bad at times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thought?
I mean, we were fighting against an evil movement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was justified. You know,
yeah.
Stop the. They were trying to annihilate the Jews and. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a three-word question that helps answer this question. What's the alternative? Maybe what is? So maybe four
sure.
words.
Whatever.
Words.
Three and a half
words. What's the alternative? All right, what's the alternative?
And you could replace the, when it says it would be better for us not to, you could replace fight a war with anything, and really there's nothing that we can do that's with perfect righteous and justice and morals. So it'd be better not to have schools, it'd be better not to have a police force, you better, right? You can go on down the list.
The perfect is often the enemy of the good.
So.
And so the idea that just because it can't be executed perfectly doesn't mean that it's out of bounds, right? The alternative is to let injustice reign, right? So what's the alternative would be the answer to that one. let's see. How about question F. If a soldier, let's say a Nazi soldier, is serving his country and believes wholeheartedly that his country is on the wrong side of a just war, what should he do? What should he do?
Excuse himself from it.
Mm-hmm. How would that go over a Nazi German?
He would be killed.
He would die.
Yeah.
He could join up, and then as soon as he gets a chance to surrender and defect.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how likely the success rate would be there either.
I know. You'd have a better chance doing that than. I mean, that's probably what I would do. You guys go on. I'll just go ahead and end this up.
I'll charge first.
I'll go first, okay?
That's the dynamite.
Yeah.
Don't fire until you hear the gunshots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you'd have to do. Is if you were decided you were an unjust war, you'd have to get out. How about, let's say an American soldier is invading Nazi Germany and received gunfire from a hospital. They call for air cover, and the hospital is completely destroyed. However, to their horror, they find that many of the civilians perish as a result of the bombing. Does this make the Americans' actions immoral? Why or why not? What if they knew that there was a possibility that civilians were on the premises when they were bombed?
So this is like what goes on in Israel all the time.
Okay, yeah.
They'll like fill an ambulance full of explosives and run up with the lights on towards a building.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they get shot down or blown up, it's on the news that Israelis blew up some ambulance full of,
mm-hmm.
you know, hurt Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then, like in the Middle East, they'll station people, civilians at their military, you know, outposts,
mm-hmm.
hoping that we won't bomb them.
Mm-hmm.
Or
like human shields.
Position hospitals next to their military facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Anybody seen an American sniper?
Yeah.
The scene where he's kind of looking at the scope and there's a kid who picks up a rocket launcher.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. You didn't shoot the kid, by the way, so I think we're free guys. But yeah, I mean, what do you do when the enemy uses those kinds of tactics? Is it immoral to bomb that hospital?
If their government is knowingly doing that,
that's on them.
We're fighting their government. We're not fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're the ones that are playing dirty, and I mean they're doing it to their own people.
Yeah.
Well, I would lean more towards that if it was just a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
If we pulled back because we thought maybe something every time, you'd never do anything because
mm-hmm.
there's always a possibility for an error.
Yeah.
I mean,
because like, what's the alternative?
Yeah.
What's the alternative? Yeah, and I think that's, like, whose responsibility is it that the civilians died?
How do we know that the civilians don't support the way that the government is operating and fighting for? I mean, they might be in line to join the army as well, and I think in war, collateral damage is just expected to happen.
Yeah.
So.
You want to minimize it, but the enemy is using body shields.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a bunch of Nazi soldiers charging at you and they have baby Bjorns with their children there, I mean, whose fault is it if those babies die? You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're the ones who intentionally put their kids in harm's way. So that's why you have to properly attribute, you know, whose fault is it? How would you assess the argument that since war is open to moral abuse, Christians should not participate? If you remove Christians from war, how will it be fought? Christians from war, how would it be fought?
I don't think Christians really have that much impact currently on how wars are fought.
Well, I mean, let's look at the My Lai Massacre. Okay, that was an unfortunate event in Vietnam where, due to some paranoia, and one thing that the Vietnamese did that was unjust was the Viet Cong did not wear uniforms. They acted like civilians and would shoot at the soldiers. And so in the My Lai Massacre, what happened was they basically were convinced that the Viet Cong were in this village of My Lai and they systematically killed them all. Now, if a Christian was in that platoon, what could he have done?
Try and talk them out of it.
Yeah. Just say, we're not doing this. I'm calling the authority. You know what I'm saying? So I do think that they're, especially on the ground, some of those decisions, there can be a restraining influence of a Christian who says, this must be done the right way, guys. We're not going to do it this way.
Are we sure the person that made that decision wasn't a Christian?
You'll know them by their fruits. You might have professed it, but,
yeah.
I mean, you read about it, I mean, it really is an embarrassing atrocity.
Yeah.
It's an embarrassing atrocity. And you can understand that. You can understand it. Not that it makes it right, but the paranoia that the Viet Cong kind of created. But
It's just hard to judge those situations without being the person in, or knowing, even having an inkling of what it's like to be fighting that war, be in that day-to-day. That's tough.
Yeah. So you look at a guy like that without the Holy Spirit, who doesn't know the Lord, who is doesn't have hope of heaven, he would be more vulnerable to falling into that than, let's say, a Christian soldier would be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just thought, what do you think about using torture to get information?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. What do you think? Yeah, I think with torture is...
I mean, there's different... I mean, like the waterboarding, I mean, that doesn't...
There's one on the board.
It's on the board.
Oh. Yeah, torture is a... Torture is a spectrum. You know what I'm saying? Like... We'll call this one the Iron Maiden, right? I won't describe it, but pretty bad, right? You're in a coffin with spikes and you can't move. I mean, that's over here versus this one is sleep deprivation, right? Where you are taking some things away, you're making them more unpleasant. And I think the question is, where do you draw the line, right? And then I think the other thing that you have to look at too is what is the purpose? What's the purpose of trying to extract information? You know, there are some senses, times where if you put too much psychological duress on people, they're not unable to even tell you the truth.
Yeah, they give you anything that will stop the torture.
Yeah,
if you reach a certain point.
Yeah, and that's like the classic Soviet mistake. They always torture people into confessions, but they never really found the truth. Right, and. Part of the reason why they weren't able to root out some of the problems is they did a terrible job of gathering intelligence because they implied torture. So I think so where you draw this line, like, is it wrong to keep somebody awake all night? Or to...
My kids are torturing me.
You keep them awake all night. You know, you might play some loud... music, or something like that. Is that ethical? Is that right? Is that okay? I mean, what if this person knew the location of a nuclear bomb in Manhattan that was going to go off in 24 hours? What can you do to extract the information from there? So I don't know. I mean, you don't want to be, you're talking about this, a consequentialist where the ends justifies the means. And the line between physical pain and psychological pain, right? Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, you guys have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, just that idea of consequentialism. If we're, you know, they know where the nuclear bomb is in your hometown or whatever, and all of your family is going to die as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're torturing them and you keep escalating and eventually you end up, okay, we're going to kill your children and your family, right? If you commit the very act that you're trying to keep them from, there's a point at which you become that thing that you're trying to, that evil that you're trying to stop. So I think it's not a, I would say that there's probably a point at which torture is going to be immoral.
Yeah, I mean, reach a point of cruelty and vengeance. That would be crossing the line.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I mean it's a harder question than people give credit for.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true of a lot of these. Is that I think one thing to learn from our class is that you know, we're trying to learn principles from the Bible that will help guide us, but there's very rarely do we read through. Oh, okay. Now when somebody asks me about war, I can tell them, okay, that's good, that's bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's very muddy.
Yeah, it is. A lot of gray areas.
It's a difficult decision. I'll just kind of close with this. Eminent liberal theologian Reinhold Niebuhr once quipped, if Britain had only been fortunate enough to have produced 30% instead of 2% of conscientious objectors to military service, Hitler's heart would have been softened and he would have not dared to attack Poland. Right? So it's being facetious here. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there is a... you know, war is held as often necessary. Yes, war is part of the curse, and yes, it will be done away with when God establishes the new heavens and new earth by an act of war, by the way. But it would be naive to say that Christians can never fight or support a war with the aim of restraining injustice. In fact, God uses the government to minister his justice upon the wicked, as well as protect the helpless and defenseless. War is allowed, and Christians can participate as agents of justice. But that said, Christians should never be warmongers. We should be lovers of peace. If we cannot support a war with a clean conscience, then it would be a sin to be a direct participant. Therefore, when the topic of war surfaces, we must do due diligence to discern whether or not the war in question is just. So let me pray that. Let you guys go. Well, Father, I do thank you for this discussion. And we just have a greater heart to pray for our leaders, as the decision to go to war is a very difficult choice. And we pray just for the peace of the nations. We pray that you will protect us from war. And should we have to do it, that'll be a clear, easy, righteous choice. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.